Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You are listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For those people that might be first-time listeners, my name is Peter Mingles. We run this whole entire Building Fortunes radio show platform. We do a lot of radio shows during the course of the week. One of my favorite radio shows that we do, more so recently because of the coronavirus, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is one with the gentleman. His name is Jim Turner. Jim Turner is an attorney over in Washington, D.C., has been around with the organization called Citizens for Health since almost the very, very, very beginning, back in 1993. He wrote a book called The Chemical Feast. He's been originally working with Ralph Nader. That's kind of like where he got started. And he's overall just a really good and super smart guy. And he has a website, citizens.org, CITIZENS.org, that I recommend everybody sign up for the newsletter. So if there's anything you want to do today to consider yourself successful, it would be to sign up for the newsletter on citizens.org. Then, of course, share this information with lots of your friends and people in your businesses, cross-line, up-line, sideline, wherever they are, because Jim's got a great perspective and he does a really great job in a lot of different areas that could affect your life specifically. So I love to do this radio show with Jim, and the reason why we get a chance to do this more with Jim Turner is because so many of us have been locked down because of the coronavirus. So we take advantage of him working from a stationary location and being more available than usual, because usually he's traveling, doing a whole bunch of other stuff, and he's not able to do the same thing anymore. So there's one advantage of the coronavirus, if you will, as we change into this new whatever thing we're eventually getting into. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as we get started with our Building Fortunes radio. And for those people that might be listening in, I think I made a mistake when I scheduled this. The default is for 15 minutes, so if you hear a message somewhere along the line that says, we're going to be done, we're not, we're going to stay on the air. I think I had my window open when I was doing the scheduling for this radio show. One had 15 minutes, one had 30, and I think I pushed the wrong button. So having said that, we are here. Nothing's going to cut us short for this message with Jim Turner. So Jim Turner, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, Peter. I appreciate it. Enjoy being here. And it's funny, we actually are getting more things done by Zoom and Skype and the phone than we were when we were traveling around, and we save ourselves a lot of time, too. So it's a very interesting set of experiences. Not the same meeting people on Zoom as meeting them in person, but still ideas get moved along and projects get done. So I just thought I'd toss that in there after you were
No, it's true. It's true. There's a new thing, if you will, that's happening with the coronavirus. All of it is not negative. So some of it is very positive because a lot of people learn how to use the technology because they had to. So, you know, now it's the bad part about it is there's a lot of things that happen when you're traveling. You're not running into the same people that you were running into, and all those strange, you know, interactions aren't happening, and all those fortuitous intersections will not happen. So there's another side of this. So we can ping pong back and forth on the positives and negative. And just like in that example, I think is happening in lots of things related to this world as well. So back to you.
Well, okay. You indicated and we discussed talking about where we are in COVID-19 today. You know, basically we're heading into the July 4th weekend. Usually it's a very big time for travel and gatherings and so on, and lots of arguments keep that minimized this year. We'll see how people respond to that. But as you read all of the coronavirus information, you can the main thing I take away from it is that we don't have much idea what this is. And I don't, and even the decision makers, both the scientific and political and economic, the three of them, don't seem to have much of a handle on what's actually happening. So right now, today, you have a good deal of news about people who were very strongly anti-mask at one point, now switching. The governor of Texas, the governor of Arizona, and even the president himself wore a mask. So, and, you know, you and I have discussed the mask question, and as I said before, my view is it's a personal choice issue. But there's a lot of information that people should gather and look at and think about when they're deciding on their mask use. Peter, you said that when we just got, just before we came on, you indicated that you had sent me a video on from a lawyer raising serious questions about masks. I haven't seen it yet. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. But we will post it on the website, on the Citizens of Health website, so everyone can see it. And understand, it's a very serious discussion. That's true of social distancing. It's true of large meetings. It's true of opening beaches. And the problem we're addressing here is that this is something. There clearly is something here. And I'm not sure what it is, but I personally, from reading everything I've read, want to stay about as far away from it as I can possibly get. Each news cycle brings in new information, creating more difficulty. So in particular, I've been reading, there was an article discussing the first a set of 62 autopsies on coronavirus deaths. And what they're reporting is unique. It's very unique. This item, the so-called novel virus, seems to attach itself to cells all over the body, all kinds of cells, and impairs the function of the organs that it's attached to, so that we started out with what was thought to be a typical influenza-type lung problem, except that the lungs were pumping, but the blood wasn't getting oxygen. Then we started finding in the autopsies, we started finding problems with the heart, the liver, although the heart stuff apparently is not as pronounced in terms of actual autopsy evidence as it was in terms of people reporting symptoms. And when you start reading all this stuff, it's very the one clarity that comes across is how unclear everything is about what's going on here. Even down to the point where I raised the other day that what does it mean to call it a novel virus? Let's suppose there is something that is called a virus and there is something that's novel. How novel does something need to be before it's different than the thing that it's novel from? We've got something going on here that we don't know very much about, and that's why I personally went outside wear a mask, because I don't know what's going on here. And I'm very interested in looking at your video that says masks are a bad thing and hurt you, and I want to understand that. But I'm noticing that people who were pretty strongly critical of masks at one point are gradually, one after another, coming on board. Even Mitch McConnell was speaking in terms that were not critical of masks. So it's a little unclear as to where we are and where we're going. I would still want to get that as our start. Let me stop right there, Peter, and see what kind of questions I've generated in your thinking.
Well, first of all, I agree with you completely as far as we don't have a handle on this. So my maybe paranoia, if you will, or maybe over-conservative approach is very similar to yours. Since we know we don't have a handle on it, it could be worse than we ever really know. And therefore, we're being told that, you know, like you said, originally started in the lungs and was a lung thing, and that originally you were going to recover. And, you know, guys like me say, wait a minute. What if it's not just a lung thing? What if it's a liver thing and a kidney thing and a whole bunch of other things? This is something you just don't want to get. It's kind of like if you were playing a game with somebody, you said, punch me in the arm, punch me in the arm. And you'd say, punch me in the arm. And you say, well, see, I didn't die. And then all of a sudden, you know, a little bit later on, you learn there was a bruise, and then the bruise led to an infection or whatever, and then you chop your arm off or you died. I treat it like that. So somebody, well, that's paranoid or maybe a hypochondriac. No, that's just being cautious. We don't know, and it could actually be doing this. So I'd say do everything you possibly can to stay away from the coronavirus. And now here's the next thing. Wear a mask. Makes sense. If you think about it, makes sense. Block it from coming in. I put up in my bathtub, I made it solid so the water can't go out, right? In your bathtub, in my shower curtain, I didn't use a screen. I used a curtain so things couldn't get out. So it makes sense, use a mask so you can protect yourself. Basic premise, number one, makes sense to me. But the real thing is, number one, what if it didn't work? What if it didn't work, and what if it actually did some harm is the question that I asked. So back to this question and back to the video. On this video, there was a really smart lawyer. So she's a she, she's a gal, she's a lawyer. She was dealing with the OSHA requirements, O-S-H-A, and Jim, you know more about OSHA than I ever will, I'm sure. But OSHA is like
the safety and health agency.
Right, so they're a federal agency, and they basically try to make sure their workplaces are protected. And that's probably why when you go into a nail salon, those girls are wearing those masks because the perfume smells, wow, that'll knock you out. But anyway, so she basically said, I took the OSHA standards, and there's this little device. It's like something you put on the top of your fingertip, which kind of controls your temperature or can show your temperature. But this little device tells you your oxygen level in your body. And she said, it's real simple. I put on this little thing, and I, on without a mask, and, you know, had 100 people on basically an experiment on the state capitol. And when we put on this little device, all of us were just fine, meaning the device was above the OSHA standards. And then we put on the mask, and we kept that little thing on, and we watched the oxygen levels. And some of the oxygen levels, and I might be getting the numbers wrong, I'm going to mention the numbers approved or okay is like 86 to 88%, whereas when they didn't have the oxygen masks on and just free roaming, they were in the 90s. As soon as they put on the oxygen mask, within seconds, the oxygen level from their finger device went into the 80s. And OSHA basically says that's dangerous. And some of the most fit people that they put these masks on, just regular masks and this little device on, some of them went down to the low 80s and even the 70s. And here's the thing. This gal spent a pretty big portion of her career as an attorney fighting, you know, with companies and OSHA and stuff like that. She's a bright woman. She's not a conspiracy thinker. This is the stuff that she would demonstrate in a court of law, in a criminal or a civil investigation, I'm sure. And she said, all you have to do is buy one of these little devices and test it on your own. And then she basically said, listen, if you're in those low 80s, if you went to your doctor would be able to get Medicare or Medicaid to pay for additional oxygen. So you just start to think about that stuff. And you say, masks make sense because they keep the bad things out. Well, what if that's true, partially, but it also creates another issue? And so my personal preference would be I would wear a mask situationally. If when I go to the eye doctor, which I have to go to, or the doctor, I'll take the risk of lowering my oxygen level, which just makes sense. I mean, you don't even have to be smart to realize that your oxygen level is probably reduced when you're wearing a mask. But the long-term effects of wearing a mask, I think, could be pretty damaging. So I'll take it off. I'm not going to run around with it. I'm not going to walk around with it. And I'm certainly not going to wear it for 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 hours a day unless I was an emergency room doctor. So that's my personal spin to it. But the video that I'll send you was extremely powerful, not from a conspiracy thing. This is just from a common sense perspective that many people will be able to take a look at and say, you know what, I can see how she could draw the conclusion. Now, what do you do with that information is your personal choice. So That's your personal choice. If I was immune compromised, I might be a little bit more concerned. But I'm very concerned, Jim, and I'm going to be quiet, that we don't know what it is. We're going to find out that it's worse than what we thought it was. And a lot of those people that were thinking that this was just something to get over are going to be very sad years from now when they find that their livers or their kidneys or their lungs or their brains or other portions of their bodies were weakened as a result of being infected by this disease. So it's almost as if I'm going to put something a little bit more personal for me. What if coronavirus caused blindness? If coronavirus caused blindness, would you want to get infected? And if the answer is no, I don't think so, well, then you'd probably wear a mask in the appropriate places. So I take a look at it from that perspective, kind of as I ping-pong back and forth amongst my analogies and my metaphors. The reality is that nobody knows. It's probably worse than we think it is. And this is something that's a complex issue and a personal decision. And the hard part is we're not getting a lot of the right information. So you really are on your own. And here's the one thing. I don't want it mandated by somebody who's worried about getting reelected is my bottom line. So back to you.
Okay. I look forward to seeing the video, and we will post it on our Corona section of our website. I do want to say, or post a link to it anyway, I do want to say that what you said, I think, contains an extremely important piece of information, which I'm using, and I think we should all seriously think about it, and that is measuring your oxygen intake daily. Actually, I do it in the morning and the evening, your oxygen level. Anytime you go to your doctor, you know, and when they check you in now, they take blood pressure, and they also measure your heart and oxygen functions. That's what that little thing on your finger is all about. And I think they're, you know, $20 or something off Amazon. They're relatively easy to get. We have one here that we use. And what she said is, what she reported her saying is extremely important. That is, first, the idea is to measure the oxygen in relation to the mask. Now, that is a very intelligent, sound thing to do. The notion of the numbers is that 95, I think the maximum on the measuring device is 99, and I think that's because I think they have only two digits, but I think 99 is essentially the maximum oxygen level that you can have. 95 to 99 is considered to be optimal. 90 to 95 is in the yellow zone, cautionary. Anything below 90, you're in that area where you're starting to qualify for medical intervention. So I think it would be very valuable for anybody to use a mask and do what she did. And also measure your oxygen to know if you're at 97, 98, and you wear your mask and you're down to 95, that's not a big deal. But if you're at 93 and you end up going down to 87, that's a problem. I mean, that's a serious problem. And you can learn the most important overlying principle of or overarching principle of health care or health, optimum health, optimum whole person health. The overarching principle is biochemical individuality. We are totally individual. And the notion that there's any number that says everybody will fit into that number, or even that most people will fit into that number, whatever it is, including, interestingly enough, how long pregnancy goes. Pregnancy, we say 9 months, but the pregnancy ranges from, 8 to 11 months, 12 months sometimes. Totally normal, totally natural. It's up to the, it's an individual function. All I'm saying is just be aware that we're all different. And when they give us these numbers, they're guides, they're helpers. And if you can measure your own oxygen routinely and get a sense of it, and then you can also find ways of enhancing your own oxygen if you have to. It is from everything I can read, the dropping of your oxygen levels precedes the COVID virus problem by maybe a couple of months. It's like a really good early warning indicator. So useful. Do exactly what that was all about. And again, when you think about masks, you mentioned the function of the mask as a protective device for the individual wearing it. But it also is a device that keeps an individual who is infected from spreading the infection. And one of the biggest things about COVID that we have learned, apparently, from reading what I've read, is that people are in a position to spread the virus, many people, long before they know they've got it. That there are people who are asymptomatic, who are out in the community, who spread the virus. And that's one of the main reasons why the mask is important. So it helps cut into the spreading. So I just mentioned that there are things that you want to think through. We do have on the website, Citizens for Health website, a little COVID corner, more or less, in which we're posting things merely because we think they're interesting or some of our followers think they're interesting, like your video that you mentioned you sent, and we're posting those things, and based on our fundamental principle, which is that everybody is in a position to make the decisions for their own lives, and what we want them to do is be informed decisions. So that's an important reaction to that. Now, earlier on, we talked about the pros and cons of the lockdowns and so forth, and I wanted to add something here. Maybe this would be what we would do to close out the program today. It's a little bit of an upper. It's a poem. It's stylized as a poem that was sent by one of our followers. And it's a poem by a person named Kitty O'Meara, who I don't know. But I thought it would be interesting just to read it. It's not too long, and give a little feel for at least how some people are taking in this whole experience. So I'm going to do that. Here's how it goes. And the people stayed home and read books and listened and rested and exercised and made art and played games and learned new ways of being and were still and listened more deeply. Some meditated, some prayed, some danced, some met their shadows, and the people began to think differently, and the people healed. And in the absence of people living in ignorant, dangerous, mindless, and heartless ways, the earth began to heal. And when the danger passed and the people joined together again, they grieved their losses and made new choices and dreamed new images and created new ways to live and heal the earth fully as they had been healed. That's a little positive way, effort to look at what's happening and going on here, and something to think about as we go forward. So, Peter. Questions? Anything else? We have about 4 minutes to go.
So here's the bottom line, in my opinion, and the thing where we're really missing the mark for whatever reason, whether it's incompetence or, you know, whatever reason. People are exposed to different things every day. And the body, based on everything I've learned and have been told, basically has innate ability to try to survive. So it's going to be able to figure out how to, you know, handle stuff. So nobody gets infected with 5 gallons of COVID virus. You get infected with a few pieces of whatever the genetic material might be, and then it starts to do its thing. But we've been around viruses since the beginning of time, and a strong body can handle just about anything. So in addition to everything, a lot of people are not talking about what we can do to help that body. So we're not really focused on health and nutrition or the natural medicines that people or natural things that people could do to be able to fix stuff. So one of the things that you're working on is homeopathy. So homeopathy is like one of those natural things that people can do to be able to help strengthen their body. So it'll help whenever it runs across not only this one, but every other one that the body ever runs across. So do you want to tell us what's going on? And oddly enough, you know, the idea that they're trying to take away my choices of being able to use this alternative to artificial medicine. So I'll let you kick it off with that.
Well, it is very important to understand, first of all, the point you were making, it's the fundamental point of Citizens for Health, and that is the innate intelligence of the body. The body has its ability to actually learn and experience and then organize a way of being of fitting into whatever's going on around it. And that's the premise that underlies homeopathy. It's part of that innate intelligence of the body, and then the biochemical individuality. Everybody has a different mechanism for figuring out how to deal with whatever is coming its way. And homeopathy is designed, and from its inception back in the 1790s, it was designed to provide support for the individual. It's like if you have a room full of people and you spray some, let's call them germs, into that room, some of those people will get sick and some of them will not. Our entire medical infrastructure system has focused its attention on the people that got sick and has designed this pharmaceutical system and adjuncts of the pharmaceutical system to address the thing that is causing the problem. Very little of our medical infrastructure has actually focused itself primarily on creating the strength of the body to handle whatever is coming its way. There's the prevention of illness and the promotion of health are things that tend to be overlooked in our system as we work diligently to create new drugs, new products, new things that can be used to kill off bad stuff. And that approach is the regulators and the market do not really like to spend a lot of energy and time on things that do not generate large amounts of money. So the homeopathic marketplace, according to FDA in the United States today, is about $3 billion. That's in a medical system that is basically in the neighborhood of $5 trillion, $4 to $5 trillion, and they have $3 billion of that. But interestingly enough, the people who do have a homeopathic practitioner and do use homeopathy are very, very comfortable and empowered by it. And they manage to deal with some very serious problems in ways that carry fewer, if not none, side effects. The pharmaceutical industry and the FDA tend to want to say that since it doesn't have any of these major interventions that have become sort of the signature of the medical system, since it doesn't intervene that way, homeopathy, it probably, or they don't say probably, they flat out, is meaningless. But there are maybe 5 to 10 million people in the country and about 500 million worldwide that use it. It's been used in the past as a way of people being strengthened in the face of epidemics, and it has been used to create very good, strong biomedical responses to insults that come along. Homeopathy now, the Americans for Homeopathy Choice, a consumer group, I think you had them on your program once, they've petitioned the FDA. I'm the attorney that's helping them. They petitioned the FDA for a rule setting up how homeopathy can be properly regulated. Specifically, they want a rule that says you can't call something homeopathic if it's not homeopathic, and two, if it's manufactured improperly, it has to comply with FDA good manufacturing practices, and if it's manufactured improperly, FDA should regulate the manufacture of the product. And that's what we're asking the FDA to adopt, and that's the alternative of their saying all homeopathic drugs are meaningless and don't actually cause anything positive, and therefore they shouldn't. Therefore, we should be able to take them off the market whenever we want. That's not the way to create choice or in choice at all, but informed choice for individuals who are using these products. So if the petition exists at the FDA, you can Google the FDA for it. Or actually, if you went to Americans for Homeopathy Choice, it's posted on their website. And how you can comment on that petition is set out there. And the basic comment that is the most important at the moment is we want to have consumer choice for using homeopathic products. And we therefore think the FDA should take this seriously and consider this petition and create some form of regulation. It's all spelled out on the website what to say, and you can learn about it, read about it, read the petition, and so forth. And we're confident that strengthened individuals, individuals strengthened by use of and reliance on homeopathy, are in a stronger position to withstand things like the COVID pandemic or any other thing. And just to underscore what you're saying, this is not in lieu of anything that's out there that anybody is recommending, trying, and so forth. This is an addition. This is an addressing of the individual to strengthen their own system of self-protection. One last thing before we go off is I do want to say that one of the things that I learned as looking into the autopsy report and then reading about what's happening with this disease is that early on we were saying it looks like a disease of the elderly who are more vulnerable, but younger people don't seem to be affected. That now is no longer correct. There are lots of younger people affected. And one of the most arresting facts that seems to be in the mix is that people can have the virus, be damaged by the virus, not show that they're having any side effects or any symptoms or anything, but over time, this particular insult from this particular novel virus continues. And you find people who are 6, 8, 10 months away from being exposed having very serious medical expressions. And I take it that many months out because it's now starting to appear that people were encountering this disease as early as November last year. So we've been in it for a while, and we are now at this very time reaping a certain amount of grief from not having recognized it earlier, not having acted early. So I just put that out there. The United States has 4% of the world's population, but it's got well over 50% of the incidence of COVID virus. It's a very serious situation that we're in, and everybody just needs to take it seriously and understand we don't know very much about what's happening, and do everything that makes sense.
You know, thanks for the insight, Jim. There's one other point. We can go into bonus time just a little bit more. There's one other point, and this has to do with censorship. So just recently this week, there was a whole bunch of other YouTubers and other people that were deplatformed. One of them that I used to watch a lot was a gentleman who was basically a philosophizer, I call him. His name was Stefan, S-T-E-F-A-N, Molyneux. So he was a gentleman from Canada, had complex thoughts. He was mostly into philosophy, but he did a lot of research. And he also may have been Trump-leaning, I'm going to say. So they just wiped out 14 years of his life as he was a YouTube influencer. And thousands of videos, and an unbelievably smart man that had a great ability to kind of talk about a whole bunch of other things, and they just wiped him out. Well, bringing this again tied into this one lawyer that we mentioned a little bit earlier that made the video, I got her information from somebody that presents to me some really kooky things. I mean, some of these kooky thinking people. Some people call them conspiracy thinking. Some of them are really out there. Some of them are right on. Some of them are way out there. I'm talking like way out there. And I got that video from that way out there sometimes person. And the bottom line is I want to be able to make the decision myself what I consider goofy or not, or good or not, but I need that flow of information to be able to make those decisions personally. And unfortunately, it's becoming harder to be able to make those decisions. The good part, and I'll let you carry on with this, the good part is just like if you've ever tried to squeeze a water balloon between your hands. When you try to squeeze a water balloon between your hands and you keep your fingers open a little bit, the water balloon somehow figures out which finger to squeeze its way into it. Just like that, there are opportunities for other sites to pop open and be able to shed a light on these people. But I think it's really important for us to realize that there is a definite censorship of information for whatever reason, political, financial, who the hell knows. But there is. So I'll let you comment on that, and then I'll let you wrap up our show.
Well, there is. There is a lot of censorship. And the only thing I want to say about the censorship issue is that it's been going on for quite a while. We have a number of clients who have posted products on Amazon and Google both over the last 4 or 5 years who have not been able to get on. And what I've observed is that the FDA has constraints on what it's allowed to do because it's a federal agency. But these services like Google and Amazon are private businesses, and so you don't have to have any reason for keeping people off. You just say, I don't want you on, and you're off, and that's a very serious problem, and it's taking on even more seriousness with the COVID activity. Our sense is, the Citizens for Health sense is that we need to have all the information we can in the market, and then individuals can begin to make choices about that information. And we have a little bit of a ticklish problem with COVID because bad choices by individuals that cause the virus to spread affects a lot of other people. It's an interesting thing when you're engaging in a behavior that is stylized as your right, your choice. People think about it differently than when it's stylized as affecting others. So for years there was an effort efforts underway to somehow or another cut back on smoking. For the whole population. We had about 43% or so of the population smoked in 1963 when the Surgeon General report came out. By the way, it's about 18% now. But the big drop occurred when it was established that secondhand smoke actually affected people. All of a sudden, when you're riding on the plane, it's not only yourself that you're being affecting with the cigarette, but it's the other people on the plane. And the magnitude of that, as it got to be more and more known, changed the whole cultural response and the entire regulatory response and the judicial response. And so the idea being that affecting third parties changes the public policy equation. And the issue with the COVID virus, and in particular the masks, is that virus goes from one person to another and affects them. And the question is wearing the mask a responsibility to protect others? And again, if in fact it does cut back the amount of oxygen, now it's a risk-benefit trade-off, and maybe we have to wear masks but learn how to do it in a way that doesn't undermine our oxygen, which means staying indoors as much as possible, and then when you go out, wearing the mask, and then get back indoors as quickly as possible and keep your access to oxygen going. But anyway, my only point there is that affecting third parties changes the equation significantly, and we are in a situation where we do not know really where or how or why people are getting sick when there are others who are in almost the identical position who don't get sick. So, Peter, I think we should
be done.
We could be done. I'll look at that video. We can maybe talk about that next week, and we may have some little broader conversations next week.
Excellent information. I appreciate your being here whenever you get a chance. For those people that want to hear all this great information, again, if they go to buildingfortressradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear all of the previous years of radio shows that we've done with Jim Turner. So each one of them has really great lessons. So unlike some radio shows that I would say, you know, it's timely information, they're probably out of date, things have moved on, the information being inaccurate, almost every single radio show that we've ever done had a lesson from Jim Turner. So really great information. Jim, I appreciate you being here. Have a happy 4th of the July weekend. We'll talk about those types of things later, and we will catch you next time. Thanks, everybody. Bye for now.
Have a happy 4th.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly 2 decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle, and read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.